Setting aside the embarrassing foibles that would mark his latter years, King Solomon was a remarkable young leader. In fact, Solomon was the quintessential Renaissance man. Multi-talented, driven to succeed, a brilliant scholar, and more. Well, today, on Insightful Living, Chuck Swindoll invites us to focus on these traits and for the moment, ignore the tragic mistakes that would later come in Solomon's life. By doing so, we'll begin to see our own gifts and talents as opportunities to serve God with passion. Chuck called today's message, Solomon in Living Color, and we begin with prayer.
Our Father, our God, Lord of our life and Lord of our treasure, we bow before you just as another reminder that we are submissive to you and to your will in our lives. We ask you in a very special way this evening, these quiet few moments that are before us, to search us and to see us as we are and to ready us for the opening of our own lives as we open God's Word, your Word, together, and also as we give out of the treasure that you have filled for us. We do so with a sense of delight and gratitude for all of our lives, all we have and all we hope to be, is to be returned to you. We give with that attitude this evening in the name of your Son, who gave it all. Amen.
You're listening to Insight for Living. To prayerfully support this Bible teaching ministry today, please visit our website at insightforliving.org.uk. And now the message from Chuck called Solomon in Living Color.
When my family was younger, we used to play a lot of car games to make the time go by faster. I'm sure that you have done that name game, fill-in-the-blank game, letter game, number game, any game to make the miles go by as you were taking a long trip. You remember those times? Every once in a while, I would really persuade them to get into the Bible, and we would do Bible games. And it was amazing how many of those Bible characters have become analogous to, well, to little sayings that we have today. Now, I want you to be a part of this for the next few moments, and let's see if you can't follow right along with it. For example, we have the expression, the patience of not bad. Really, not bad. How about as old as Methuselah? Right. Dare to be a Daniel, as strong as, well, somebody said an ox, and somebody said Samson. Well, it's about the same, so we'll go on. When you refer to somebody who has doubts, you say he's a doubting Thomas. We think of a whale, we think of Jonah. We think of a flood, we think of Noah. When someone is little, we say he is as small as, I thought of Bildad. He's mentioned in Job, Bildad the Shuhite. Or I could have I could have mentioned Nehemiah, but that wouldn't have worked either. But I think when we mention Solomon, and if we were in a game together, we would immediately think of wisdom, as wise as Solomon. But unfortunately, that is only one facet of Solomon's life. That's a whole door that God opened for him and just kept filling his mind with all sorts of wisdom. But it's only a part of his life. He was much broader than just wisdom. And this evening, we're going to see from this gift that God has given us, the book of God, the Bible, just how insightful God made Solomon. He made him, to begin with, a man of God. In 2 Chronicles chapter 1, this person we would normally think of as simply wise was first and foremost godly. He was a man of God. That's the very first scene we have of this young 25-year-old monarch. He was godly. 2 Chronicles 1. I just want to read one verse from it, the first one, and then we're going to go to 1 Kings for the rest of the night. 2 Chronicles 1. Now Solomon, the son of David, established himself securely over his kingdom, and the Lord his God was with him and exalted him greatly. Indeed, he did. But it is important to see before the exaltation, God was with Solomon. We rush to the exaltation and we forget the first part. God gave him a heart for the Lord. And this man deeply loved the living Lord. He walked with him. He modeled spirituality, godliness. In 1 Kings chapter 3 now, beginning at verse 7, and for a few other verses in this book, we want to see proof of that. 1 Kings 3, verse 7. And now, O Lord my God, obviously Solomon is praying, thou hast made thy servant king in place of my father David. Now look at his genuine humility. One of the marks of godliness is authentic humility. He says, thou hast made thy servant a king in the place of my father. Yet I am but a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. A Hebrew colloquialism for carry out my job. I don't know how to do what I'm supposed to do. I'm a little boy. I'm just a toddler. I'm thinking Solomon probably had himself in contrast with his father, David, who had been seasoned in his walk with God. Solomon says, this whole thing is a brand new walk for me. I'm like a little boy. Verse 8, and thy servant is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen. He sensed a tremendous responsibility, a great people who cannot be numbered or counted for multitude. Verse 28, last verse. When all Israel heard of the judgment which the king had handed down, he makes a decision in the middle of that chapter there. And when they all heard it, they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to administer justice. The people linked God with the leader. That's very important. Not just wisdom, but God's wisdom. They saw in him the marks, the genuine marks of godliness. That is what this world, that is what your family wants to see in you. That is the turning point. That is the unique mark or brand that you have to offer. Godliness, not religious lifestyle, but a godly lifestyle. And when these people saw that he would be one who would administer justice, they linked it with the living Lord. They saw true godliness in him. Look at chapter 8, same book, 8:12. He has completed a project. We're going to look at a little more in detail in this study, but I wanted you to see first the statement of Solomon following the success of it. 8:12, then Solomon said, the Lord has said that he would dwell in the thick cloud. I have surely built thee a lofty house, a place for thy dwelling forever. Then the king faced about. Now remember, he's a king. He is not a priest. He does not have the responsibility of ministering in the temple or what had been there when he was brought up in the tabernacle. He's a king, but this king faced about and blessed all the assembly while all the assembly of Israel was standing. He said, blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who spoke with his mouth to my father David and has fulfilled it with his hand. And then he reviews, if you'll notice, for a lengthy period of time throughout that chapter, he reviews the working of God. It's one of the longest prayers in the Old Testament, Solomon's prayer of dedication, as he lifts this whole structure of the temple to God and says, it's all for your glory. He was really a man of God. Look at the end of the chapter, verse 59. May these words of mine, which I have made supplication before the Lord, Be near to the Lord our God day and night, that he may maintain the cause of his servant and the cause of his people Israel as each day requires. We don't want to lose sight of our target, says Solomon. So that all the peoples of the earth may know that the Lord is God, there is no one else. And look at him as he exhorts. Let your heart, therefore, be wholly devoted to the Lord our God, to walk in his statutes, to keep his commandments as at this day. Now, follow this. Now, the king and all Israel with him offered sacrifice before the Lord, did they ever? He offered for the sacrifice of peace offerings, which he offered to the Lord, 22,000 oxen, 120,000 sheep. So the king and all the sons of Israel dedicated the house of the Lord. You will never be able, as a discipler, to bring anyone further in his walk with God than you are. You just cannot do it. As a Christian faculty member, you will never be able to prompt and to instill within your students those characteristics that are only theory to you. They are passed on from life to life. Solomon, therefore, is able to say, let your heart be wholly dedicated, completely, thoroughly. I find in him genuine humility, personal integrity, and a real scriptural loyalty. He followed the letter of this book in his life. He wasn't out on a lark. And I want to say again, it is unfair to Solomon, it is unfair to the story in Scripture that we rush to his shipwreck and say, alas, what a failure, and not see the greatness of this man who for years prompted the people in godliness. He just was a challenge to be around. Now back to chapter 4. We've seen him as a man of God. He puts on another hat in chapter 4. He is a scholar, expressing itself in his writings and in his composition of music. 1 Kings chapter 4, verse 29. These are such helpful words in understanding the man. 4:29, and I hope that this does encourage some who are so gifted today and wonder at times if there is room in the evangelical world for you. Indeed, there is. Verse 29, God gave Solomon the very important words, just like you have been given from God certain things, gave him wisdom and very great discernment and breadth of mind. Breadth of mind, like the sand that is on the seashore. Rokav is the Hebrew word, and it means largeness, something that grows wider and wider and wider. I think of a megaphone when I say that. Something that starts smaller and it gets larger and larger and larger. God gave him a mind that was not satisfied with just one or two little areas of interest. He was able, he had the capacity to entertain vast areas of knowledge. And the writer goes on to tell us what some of those areas were. Follow along with me. As illustration of this breadth of mind, verses 30 and 31. Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the sons of the East and all the wisdom of Egypt. Means nothing to us today, but in that day it was the ultimate in wisdom. He was wiser than all men, and then they are named for us. Ethan and Heman, Calco, Darda, they are the Pulitzer Prize winners. They're the Nobel Prize winners. They were the Einsteins of that day. And Solomon, as the writer tells us, outstripped them all. C.F. Kyle, one of the very keen writers of the Old Testament, an old German scholar, says this. These men were celebrated both for their astronomy, their astrology. All the wisdom of the Egyptians was a colloquialism or proverbial for maximum knowledge. It extended over the most diverse branches of knowledge, such as geometry and arithmetic and astronomy and astrology, and extensive acquaintance with medicine and the natural sciences. Solomon proved himself very learned. And I find it interesting how the Hebrews divided the world of animals in the next couple or three verses. It says that he spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005, He was a songwriter. He was a writer of books. He spoke not just of biblical things, but look, he spoke of trees. So he was a writer in botany. From the cedar that is in Lebanon, even to the hyssop that grows on the wall. He spoke of animals, birds, creeping things, and fish. That's how the Hebrews divided it. His study included zoology and ornithology and the reptile world, the world of fish. He spoke of all those things, and I take it that he wrote of them, as it mentions elsewhere, other than here. It mentions his writings in other books that have not become biblical books that have been preserved. Here is a man whose mind was broad, deep, and varied, and he did a job in those areas. We think only of the Proverbs and of his song, but there were many. One of the men that grew up in this church went on to Cal Berkeley, and he studied, of all things, entomology, which is the study of insects, and he specialized in the cricket. And one of his summers he spent up in the northern section, northwest, and up into Canada studying a cricket that came out at night. I found myself fascinated when I had some time with him. He said he felt like a nut out there. He had a little flashlight, and he would go along the railroad track, and he was wondering what people would think as they looked up. He was looking for these little brown crickets, and he got them all together and brought them. He was just fascinated by that little cricket. One little field of knowledge that, as he opened it up to me, I saw it was incredibly vast. And his desire, of course, is to assist in our agriculture and helping to solve the problem of insects that are indeed invading. And it was a reminder of the vast areas of knowledge that most of us never think of. And Solomon studied in those fields. You know what I see in all of this so far? I see a wedding of authentic godliness and academic excellence. And they can coexist. I see academic excellence, breadth of knowledge in this great mind, and I see a walk with God. You do not have one or the other. You need not have one or the other. I am most interested these days in some works that are going on to interest the young intellectual. You may not be aware of some. You may be aware of all of them. InterVarsity Christian Fellowship is moving more into this area in their writings and in their work with faculty and students on university campus. Another ministry is Probe Ministries out of Dallas, with a whole body of men and women that are reaching into the classroom and touching people with academic excellence and at the same time true biblical, authentic Christianity. Christian Medical Society is coming into its own in our era, coming out of hiding. It's reaching into areas. For Creation Research out of Dallas. Henry Morris of the Whitcomb Morris writings, The Genesis Flood, is doing a job. LaBrie Fellowship in Switzerland is another that's reaching them, answering some of the questions. I'll tell you, the most effective of all is the Christian faculty member. In schools of higher learning, as well as high school, junior high school, and even the elementary schools. I don't think that we are faithful enough to pray for those on that cutting edge or for the schools that absolutely struggle for existence. I was really brought to an awareness of this when I finished the work by Paul Reinert, Roman Catholic writer. He is a former president of St. Louis University, writes entitled, To Turn the Tide. And his chapter that moved me most was entitled Requiem for a System. Listen to his words. The campus is still empty. Like any corpse, that of a college is not pleasant to behold. Yesterday I was very much alive. What can be more alive, after all, than a college or university? Halls full of laughter, footsteps, hellos, classrooms full of purpose, ideas, optimism, dormitories charged with that special wattage of the young. Just yesterday, there flourished here the icon of contemporary American higher education, a college devoted to academic excellence, committed to academic freedom, a total institution for learning, its alumni useful to society. Yet, just yesterday, this school, with its student body, its faculty, and its administrators, now gone. But today, it's over. The final bell is sounded. Administrators of independent colleges and universities like this one throughout the land will not send to know for whom the bell tolls. They know it tolls for them. Many of these same administrators have come from around the country to attend the auction. No, the wake. They stand fidgeting as final rites are performed, three classrooms at a time by an auctioneer. The litany, what am I bid? The college stands on the crest of a hill, the building's deep red brick with the wood trim gleaming white, freshly painted. Inside in the classroom, books still lie on the desk, chalk and erasers wait at the blackboards, maps and charts hang on the walls. Down an empty corridor to the president's office, unopened mail on the big mahogany desk. Further on, the library, quieter now than libraries were ever meant to be. It is as if a bell has rung and everyone has filed out, perhaps for a fire drill. This is what remains after the president of a college or university calls the faculty together and announces the bills can no longer be paid and you're getting your last paycheck. And he's very sorry. You grab your coat and you run out. It will hit you later like a hammer, but right now you have to land a job. Left behind are papers unmarked in a drawer, a lesson chalked on the board for no one. And then the auction. And then it's over. A college has died. No one will say it cannot happen to my school. These administrators of the nation's independent colleges and universities know better. They know that it's a tricky business spending more than what you take in and getting away with it until tomorrow. In a word, association test, a layman's response to college might be education, but to most independent college or university presidents, the answer is deficit, written large. And for this particular Mid-America college, one of the 30-odd which will close its doors during this year, the condition is terminal. Those of us who are a little beyond that age, or those of us who are younger than that time, tend to forget that. But when you're in that little squeeze era of 4, 6, 8, 10 years, you are very, very aware of it. I want to say a word for those schools that are doing a job. Those independent works that hang in there, committed to excellence in the study of academics and yet not bending one bit on the things of God. And I send out a plea on their behalf that we give them our personal attention, support. I don't read where Solomon got his training at any one of them, but that's where we get ours. I wonder if you would just be faithful enough this week, just in application of what you're hearing tonight, to pray for those who shape minds and are preparing to do that this fall. And I'm thinking of the Christian scholars right now for the sake of our study, those men and women that carry out that assignment. Solomon shaped lives and did it in a beautiful manner. He wore two hats so far. He wore the hat of godliness. He wore the hat of intellectualism. He also was quite an administrator and quite an architect. He was a gifted artist with people and with pen. In chapter 4 of 1 Kings, early on, you'll see him in his finest hour. He sets up a cabinet, and then he engages in a project. I want you to see the cabinet he sets up. Chapter 4, verse 1. He was king over all Israel. Well, how do you get a handle on a nation? Well, you divide it into parts and you put qualified men over those parts. You delegate the task. That's exactly what he does. Verse 2, these were his officials and they are named. Verse 7, and these are his 12 deputies and they are named. So he had officials, and I take this to be the cabinet, and he had deputies, and I take these to mean governors over big chunks of land. They are named for us. He had a priest, verse 2. He had a secretaries, verse 3. He had a recorder, verse 3, right on down. And then he had these deputies who were responsible, apparently, for taxation, for the carrying out of laws, for the military forces in Israel. very keen administrator.
It's fascinating to hear Solomon's story in a way we've probably never considered before. There's much more to learn about his life, so please stay with us. Chuck Swindoll, our Bible teacher, called today's message Solomon in Living Color. Even if you're a long-time listener to Insight for Living, Chuck's six-part series on Solomon might be brand new to you. But actually, it's a classic study that goes back to his early days in pastoral ministry. We digitally remastered the recordings from the 1970s, and you can order all six CDs or the downloadable MP3 files by going to insightforliving.org.uk. Now, there came a time in David's life when he needed to pass the baton of leadership to the next generation. He chose Solomon, who was tasked with carrying David's legacy forward. We see the same dynamic between Moses and Joshua. Moses was a cherished leader, but he understood that his legacy would dissipate were it not for Joshua. Joshua, with fear and trepidation, agreed to lead the Israelites. Chuck Swindoll wrote a brand new booklet on this topic. It's called How to Follow a Giant. In his booklet, Chuck condenses more than six decades of ministry into a highly personal primer on leadership. Whether you're a pastor, a business leader, or a grandparent, you'll resonate with the truth presented in this booklet. Again, it's called How to Follow a Giant, and it's yours with your much-needed donation today. To request a copy, call us on 0800-787-9364. You can also request the booklet How to Follow a Giant by going to insightforliving.org.uk. I'm Terry Boyle, inviting you to join us again when Chuck Swindoll continues his biography of King Solomon on Monday on Insight for Living. Have a great weekend. The preceding message, Solomon in Living Color, was copyrighted in 1978, 1980, 1982, 1987, 1995, 2008, and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Incorporated. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.